feet, brushing at the knees of her leggings. "Sorry about that," she said. "Did you just plant the tracking device?" She started walking again, heading for the end of the block, where she could begin circling back to the car. "Yes."
"Very smooth.
I told you it was nothing. I'll see you soon.
Drive safe. I love you."
Kevin shouted something in the background, and there was another thud close beside the phone. "Are you kidding?" Daniel shouted back. "A knife?" Alex ended the call and picked up the pace a little. She couldn't leave them alone for 20 minutes. She wondered if this was what having young children felt like. Things had returned to normal, or her new version of it, by the time she got back to the apartment. Daniel was still studiously watching the news. Val had just brought Einstein back from a walk and was filling the lovely crystal bowl with water for him. Kevin was watching the feed from his cameras and sharpening a machete. Home sweet home. "Anything?" she asked Daniel.
"Nothing about me. Apparently the vice president is bowing out before the election after all. I guess those recent scandal rumors aren't entirely unfounded. So of course everyone is speculating about who President Howland will select for his running mate."
"Fascinating," Alex murmured, in a tone that implied the opposite. She dumped her bag onto one of the white bar stools, sat on the next one over, and opened her computer. All seemed quiet at Casa Karsten, so she started scrubbing backward to see if she'd missed anything while she was out. So far, she hadn't discovered any regular visitors, besides the housekeeper and the security service that drove by once daily in the afternoon. Daniel flipped to a different news network, where another version of the same story was running.
"You don't care who the president runs with?" he asked. "Howland's pretty popular. Whoever he chooses will probably be the vice president, and possibly the president 4 years from now." "Ventriloquist dummies," Kevin grumbled, setting down the machete and starting to work on a long boning knife.
Alex nodded in agreement as she slowed the feed to watch two teenagers amble past Karsten's house and up the block.
"What do you mean?" Daniel asked. "I don't worry about the puppet," Kevin said. "I worry about the guy pulling the strings." "That's a pretty cynical attitude about the democratic nation you used to work for."
Kevin shrugged.
"Yep."
"Alex, Republican or Democrat?" Daniel asked. "Pessimist." She reached for the other computer, the one with the bugged calls on it, and plugged in her headphones.
"So nobody cares that the frontrunner is some ultra-right senator from Washington State who used to work for the Defense Intelligence Agency?"
The first call Alex had missed was from the daughter again. She could tell from Karsten's warm, fatherly voice. She started fast-forwarding. "Makes sense," Val was saying, pulling a rubber band out of her hair. She was wearing sweaty workout clothes and looked like she should be on a Maxim cover anyway. "Howland is soft. Get someone with a conservative edge, pull some voters off the fence. Plus, the new guy is one part grandpa, one part silver fox, with a catchy, two-syllable name. Howland could do worse." She shook her golden hair out, and it fell into perfect waves down her back.
"It's sad, but you're probably right. Just a beauty pageant."
"Everything is, honey," Val told him. Alex stopped to check the recording, but Karsten was still just listening and muttering kindly mm-hmms. She sped it up again.
"I suppose I should get used to it, since I imagine I don't get to vote anymore."
Daniel frowned.
"Vice President Pace. Do you think he was born with that name, or did he alter it to make it voter-friendly? Wade Pace. Is that something you would name a kid?"
"I wouldn't name a kid anything," Val said, "because I would never be dumb enough to bring one home." Alex's fingers reached down automatically to stop the recording.
"What was that?"
she asked. "Just explaining that I'm not the mom type," Val said. "No, Daniel. What was that name?"
"Senator Pace? Wade Pace?"
"That name. It sounds familiar."
"I think everyone knows his name," Daniel said. "He's been positioning himself for this kind of promotion, not exactly low profile."
"I don't follow politics," Alex said. She stared at the TV now, but it just showed some news anchor. "How much do you know about this guy?"
Just the stuff they're running on the news, Daniel answered. Sterling service record, all the normal cliches.
He was military?
Yes, some kind of general, I think.
A lieutenant general?
Maybe.
Kevin was paying attention now.
Wade Pace. Pace. With a P. That our guy?
Alex stared into space, unconsciously rocking slightly back and forth on her stool. He's from Washington State. He worked defense intelligence. She looked up at Kevin. Let's say the DIA is theoretically exploring some biological weapons options. This guy's already got some political aspirations, so of course he makes sure the money gets spent in his hometown. They would have had plenty of innocuous goals on the surface. All the outsiders would see was the economic boost. Probably helped get him his seat in the Senate. Great. But then years later, the fabricated virus is stolen. Obviously no one can know that he ever had a hand in its creation. No one can know it exists. We track down the bad guys, and they give up too much information. Wade Pace has big dreams. Anyone who heard his name in connection with this virus
has to be preemptively silenced.
Kevin finished.
And who knows exactly what the too thorough CIA agent might have seen. Better shut him up, too.
Can't take any chances, Alex whispered. Not when you're reaching this high. It was silent for 30 seconds. Wow, Val said, so loudly it made Alex jump. Are you guys going to assassinate the vice president? She sounded utterly thrilled by the idea.
He's not the vice president yet, Kevin said. He's nothing, officially. That means no Secret Service.
Daniel's mouth was hanging open. Higher stakes again, but not by so very much. In the end, no matter what else he represented, Wade Pace was just one beating heart. Kevin locked eyes with Alex.
So, he put a hit out on me, my brother, you, your friend, so he could try to be president. Oh, I'm going to enjoy this one.
She opened her mouth, but then quickly snapped it shut again. It would be a lot easier and safer for her to let Kevin do as much of the wet work as possible. But there was her anonymity. Daniel's too, so she might as well lump in Kevin's matching face, which had to be protected above all else if this plan was going to work. Kevin might be better at killing people than she was, but she was pretty sure that she was better at doing it with minimal ripples. If you want something done right. As much as I hate to deprive you of any fun, I think you might want to let me take this one. She shivered slightly. This was probably a big mistake. Was she turning into the adrenaline junkie she'd accused Daniel of being? She didn't think so. She felt nothing but dread at the idea of adding another job to her list. Quiet is the goal, right? It won't get too much attention if our wannabe president dies of a heart attack or a stroke. Not the same coverage as if he were found shot in some kind of home invasion.
I can be quiet, Kevin insisted.
His eyebrows were pulling down into a scowl. Natural causes quiet?
Close enough.
Close enough puts our other targets on high alert.
They're already on high alert.
So how do you see this happening?
I'll improvise when I get there.
Sound plan.
You know how many people die in household accidents every day in this country?
No. But I'm positive that more white men in their early 60s die from health-related problems than from any other reason.
Okay, great. A heart attack would be the quietest way for Pace to die. Agreed. How are you going to get in, Shorty? Knock on the door and ask to borrow a cup of sugar? Be sure to wear your frilly apron. Really sell it.
I can adapt the Karsten plan. I'll just need a few more days of research on Pace. Kevin's hand slapped loudly against the counter.
We don't have that kind of time. We've delayed too long as it is. You know Devers and Karsten aren't wasting the prep time we've already given them.
Rushing just leaves openings they can take advantage of. Proper preparation.
You are so annoying!
She hadn't realized how close together she and Kevin had gotten, pretty much spitting in each other's faces from about 6 inches away, until Daniel's hand suddenly shot in between them.
Can I interrupt to suggest the obvious? He asked.
Kevin smacked his hand away.
Stay out of it, Danny.
Alex took a deep, calming breath.
What's obvious? She asked Daniel.
Alex, you have the best plan for how to, assassinate the senator.
He shook his head quickly.
I can't believe this is real.
It's real, Kevin said harshly.
And I wouldn't call a plan with no entry point the best plan.
Let me finish. Alex has the best methodology. Kevin, you have the best chance of getting in undetected.
Yeah, I do, Kevin said belligerently.
Oh, Alex said, feeling suddenly disgruntled for some reason. Probably just bruised pride and the irritation of having to cooperate with someone so obnoxious.
You're right, she admitted to Daniel. Again. He smiled.
What? Kevin demanded.
And stop with the goo-goo eyes. You'll make me vomit.
Obviously. Alex drew the word out into almost five syllables. We have to do this together. You go in with my pre-mixed solution in hand. Actually, her brain started turning over options. More than one solution, I think. We'll have to stay in contact so I can guide you to the best application. Kevin gave her a withering look.
You're in command, and I'm just following orders on the ground?
Alex stared him down. Tell me your better plan. Kevin rolled his eyes, but then refocused.
Fine. It makes sense. Whatever.
Alex felt better already. She could perform her part without any risk, and though she didn't love to admit it, she knew Kevin could do his. Kevin snorted like he could hear her thoughts, then said,
Can I ask one favor?
What do you want?
When you're mixing your little beakers of poison, could you make this one hurt?
Hurt bad. Alex smiled in spite of her fear. That I can manage. He pursed his lips for a minute.
This is weird, Ollie. I almost like you right now.
The feeling will pass.
You're right. It's fading already.
He sighed.
How long will you need with your chemistry set?
Alex calculated quickly. Give me 3 hours.
I'll research my new target then.
Kevin grabbed his machete and other knives and headed upstairs, whistling. Alex stood and stretched. Even with the new pressure and attached dread, it felt good to have the answer. The missing name had been an irritant, like an itch on the inside of her skull. Now she could concentrate on her next move.
All right, I'm in the master bath.
Kevin's voice was muted, for Kevin, but still louder than Alex felt was safe. If she'd mentioned her concern, he would have only reminded her that he was the expert now. But still, he was just so cocky. Alex wondered if he'd brought Einstein into the house with him. Probably, she thought, but of course the dog made no sound.
Make sure you've got his side of things. I don't want to kill the wife.
Alex couldn't bring herself to speak above a whisper, despite his apparent comfort.
What?
Make sure you find his stuff, she murmured a little louder. Nothing unisex, like toothpaste.
I'm pretty sure the right-hand side medicine cabinet belongs to our guy. Refill safety razor blades, Excedrin, SPF 45 sunblock, Centrum Silver, some makeup, but it's all flesh tones.
Be positive.
I am. Lots of lipsticks and perfumes on the left side.
Some things they might share. Check the drawers under the medicine cabinet. Alex pictured the pretty blonde woman she'd seen standing beside Wade Pace in the official photos. Carolyn Josephine Merritt Pace. She was only 10 years the senator's junior, but she looked a full quarter of a century younger. Whatever surgeries she had undergone, she'd been circumspect enough to keep things minimal. She'd retained her warm, beaming smile that crinkled the corners of her eyes and had every appearance of being genuine. She'd inherited a fortune from her aristocratic southern family, much of which she used to fund her various causes, literacy, feeding hungry children, saving music programs and inner-city schools, building shelters for the homeless. Never anything controversial. She had been a stay-at-home mother for their two daughters, both of whom had graduated from Magnolia League schools, and were now married to respectable men, a pediatrician and a college professor. From everything Alex had learned in her hurried research about the senator's wife, Mrs. Merritt Pace seemed a pleasant enough woman,
certainly not deserving of the painful death her husband was about to suffer. Hopefully about to suffer, Alex amended. There was still so much that was left to luck.
I've got 3 boxes of bar soap, a pack of extra toothbrushes, chapstick in 2 flavors, cherry and strawberry, pomade, cotton pads, Q-tips. Next drawer down. Oh, now here we go. Hemorrhoid cream. That's fitting. Suppositories, too. What you think, Ollie?
That might work. I'd love to use something topical rather than going the oral route, just to separate this as much as possible from Karsten. But he might not use either the cream or the suppositories regularly.
A good point. Though it would be so great to literally shove this poison up. Oh, hey. Is our guy a smoker?
Hold on 1 second. Alex typed the phrase, "Does Wade Pace smoke?" into her open browser window. She was immediately flooded with articles and pictures. She clicked on the images, poor quality photographs taken from behind or at a great distance. Wade Pace, younger than he was now, still some dark in his hair, usually in a military uniform, was never at the center of the photo, but it was easy enough to pick him out, cigarette in hand. And then the more recent photos, where he was centered. These were after he'd morphed into the Silver Fox, Val had called him, and he never held a cigarette. But several photographers had focused in on the nicotine patch, just slightly visible through the sleeve of his white button-down. Another on vacation, in a garish Hawaiian shirt, the bottom corner of the tan patch showing just below the sleeve. The vacation picture was from April, not that long ago.
Looks like he used to be, Alex said. Tell me you found the patches.
Nicoderm CQ. 1 half-used box, with 3 unopened packages behind it. I'll check the trash.
Alex waited eagerly through the short silence.
Affirmative. Used patches in the trash under his sink. I'd say this bin gets emptied regularly, so he's still actively using them.
This couldn't be more perfect, Alex said through her teeth. Use the syringe marked with the number 3.
Got it.
She could hear the quiet pull of a zipper. Don't let the liquid come in contact with your skin. Come at it from the seam. Don't leave an obvious pinhole.
I'm not an idiot. How much?
Depress the syringe halfway.
It's pretty small. Are you sure? You know what? Never mind. How soon will it dry?
A few hours. Put it...
underneath the top patch, right?
Kevin interrupted.
Second down.
Yes, that will work. Alex heard Kevin's low chuckle.
Mission accomplished. Wade Pace is one very deserving dead man walking. Moving on to target number 2.
Will you check in when you're in position?
Negative. Should be less than 24. I'll see you back at the apartment.
Fine.
Get on your guy, Ollie.
Her voice was a little higher pitched when she answered. Yeah. I'll have that, done before you're back. He tuned into her nervousness, and his tone became gruff, commanding.
You'd better. If I cause ripples, your plan might not work.
Right. He disconnected before she could. Again. Alex took a deep breath and set the phone and the computer down on the bed next to her. Daniel was cross-legged on the floor at her feet, one hand curled loosely around her calf. His eyes hadn't left her face throughout the phone call.
Did you get all that?
She asked. Daniel nodded.
I can't believe he didn't wake anyone. Tell me my voice isn't so piercing.
She grinned. It's not. He leaned forward to put his chin on her knee. She felt his hand tighten around her leg.
And now it's your turn.
He said the words in barely more than a whisper, but the volume didn't disguise his intensity. Not quite yet. She glanced automatically at the digital clock she'd set up as part of her temporary lab. The display read 4:15. I've got a few hours till showtime. She felt the shift against her skin as his jaw tightened. I'm not doing anything dangerous, she reminded him. I won't be breaking into anyone's fortress. It's not so different from placing the tracker.
I know. I keep telling myself that.
Alex stood, stretching, and Daniel leaned back to give her room. She nodded to the corner where her lab equipment was spread out awkwardly across a variety of end tables. She'd taken advantage of the setup to create a healthy supply of Survive after she was done with the recipes for Pace.
I suppose I should clean this up before it upsets Val.
Daniel got to his feet.
Can I help?
Sure, just don't touch anything without gloves.
It didn't take long. She'd had so much practice setting her lab up and taking it down, sometimes with an urgent deadline. Daniel was quick to grasp the order of things, and soon he had the proper case ready before she had the equipment totally dismantled. As she carefully wrapped up the last round-bottomed flask, she glanced at the clock again. She still had hours before Val would need to start on her makeup.
You look exhausted,
Daniel commented.
We got an early start. Val will fix me up so I'm presentable.
A nap might not hurt either.
Alex was fairly sure that she wouldn't be able to fall asleep. She was working to seem composed so that Daniel wouldn't worry, but in truth, she could feel the seeds of panic beginning to take root in her stomach lining. Not that she'd lied to him about anything she would be doing, but she wasn't anywhere close to relaxed about the next phase, the actual action part. The truth was, she'd fallen back into her usual mindset, gotten very comfortable with preparation. Now that it was time for her to implement the plan, her nervous system was in overdrive. Still, even just resting would probably be smart.
Good idea.
As Alex watched Karsten's housekeeper walk through the automatic doors into the huge supermarket, she took a few slow, deep breaths, trying to center herself. She examined her face in the visor mirror and was reassured by the illusion Val had created. Alex was sandy blonde today, quite believably so. Her makeup appeared understated, despite all the coverage. Alex was happy to see that her nose was settling into its new shape, probably permanently. Every little bit helped. A few other shoppers parked and entered, and Alex knew it was time to move. One more deep breath. This wasn't that hard. Just a normal shopping trip for now. Inside, the market was busy. It was a diverse group of patrons, and Alex was sure she wouldn't stick out. She was suddenly reminded of Daniel's catastrophic shopping spree in Childress, and she was surprised to find herself smiling. She blamed her reaction on nerves. Despite the traffic, it wasn't hard to find the woman she was looking for. The housekeeper was wearing a bright yellow cotton wrap dress, and the color stood out. Rather than follow her through the store, Alex worked the opposite pattern and crossed paths with her every other aisle. It put Alex in the woman's sight line more often, but seemed more natural, less creepy. The woman, who appeared to be about 50 from close up, in good shape and fairly attractive, paid Alex no attention. Meanwhile, Alex filled her cart with random items that seemed innocuous, milk, bread, toothpaste, and then added the few items that mattered. Karsten liked these small bottles of organic orange juice. They must expire quickly because the housekeeper bought a few every trip but never stocked up. Alex grabbed three, the same number as in the housekeeper's cart, and put them in the front child seat of her own. She wheeled over to an empty aisle. No one was looking for birthday cards or office supplies this morning, and then uncapped the small syringe in her pocket. It was a very slender needle, and it left almost no mark behind when she pushed it through the plastic of the orange juice bottle, just under the screw-off cap. She kept her body turned toward the cards, as if she were looking for the perfect sentimental phrase. When she was done, she grabbed a glittery congratulations card in hot pink and put it in the cart. Maybe she'd give it to Kevin when he finished his mission. It was the kind of glitter that would stick to someone for days. She and Barnaby had called this drug simply heart attack, because that's what it caused. Sometimes after the interrogation was over, the department needed to dispose of a subject in a way that looked natural. After about 3 hours, heart attack broke down into a metabolite that was nearly impossible to trace. A man of Karsten's age, in his physical condition, and factoring in the high-stress job, well, Alex greatly doubted that anyone would look too carefully at the cause of death, at least in the very beginning. Sure, if he were 25 and ran marathons, it might look more suspicious. Alex moved to the bakery next because it was near the cashier's and had an unobstructed view of the shoppers waiting to pay. It took about 10 minutes as she pretended to dither between a baguette or ciabatta rolls, but then the housekeeper appeared from aisle 19 and got into the checkout line. Alex threw the baguette into her cart and joined the next line over. This was the tricky part. She'd have to stay pretty close to the woman as they left the store.
Alex's inconspicuous black sedan was parked right next to the minivan. As the woman was loading her groceries, Alex was going to trip with her arms full of bags and fall into the minivan's bumper. Sleight of hand wasn't her specialty, but it shouldn't be too hard to leave her juice in the back of the car. Hopefully, snagging the woman's juice bottles would be possible, but if not, she assumed the housekeeper would load them all into the fridge, even if she didn't have the right number. Alex eyed the conveyor belt next to hers, double-checking that the juice was there. She spotted what she was looking for and glanced quickly away. As her own purchases slid across the scanner, her brows furrowed. Something was off. Something wasn't matching the mental picture. She glanced back at the other conveyor belt, trying to pin it down. The bagger was packing a box of Lucky Charms. The housekeeper had never bought that kind of cereal for Karsten, as far as Alex had been able to see. Karsten was a creature of habit, and he ate the same fiber-heavy cereal every morning. Sugary marshmallows with plastic prizes were not his M.O. Another quick peek, head down. The usual coffee beans, the low-fat creamer, the quart of skim milk. But there was also a half a gallon of whole milk and a box of Nilla wafers.
Paper or plastic, miss? Miss?
Alex quickly refocused, pulled her wallet open, and grabbed 320s. Paper, please, she said. The housekeeper always got paper. Her mind was turning over and over as she waited for her change. Maybe the housekeeper got groceries for herself while she was shopping for Karsten. But if she got her own milk, she'd have to carry it inside and put it in Karsten's fridge until she was done for the day, so it wouldn't spoil in the heat. And she'd never done that in the past. Was Karsten expecting guests? Alex's heart pounded uncomfortably as she followed the woman through the automatic front doors, her two bags both gripped in her left hand. She needed Karsten to be the one who enjoyed that bottle of OJ. But what if a friend grabbed it instead? A friend who was 25 and a marathoner. It would be obvious what she had attempted. Karsten would change his habits, beef up his security, and he would know it was Alex without a doubt. That she was alive and nearby. The hunt would begin again, closer than ever. Should she go with the odds? The juice was Karsten's thing. Probably he wouldn't offer it to someone else, but what if? As her mind raced through the possibilities, a small piece of meaningless information, or so she'd categorized it, popped into her head and suggested a new prospect. The zoo. The daughter had kept going on and on about the zoo. And all the calls every day, some of them hours long. What if Aaron Karsten Boyd wasn't always in such close touch with her father? What if Alex, in her hurry to get to the important calls, had fast-forwarded through vital information, like a pending visit from his daughter and granddaughter? The D.C. Zoo was famous, exactly the kind of place you'd take your out-of-town granddaughter. Just like Lucky Charms was exactly the kind of cereal an indulgent grandpa would have on hand for her breakfast. Alex sighed, quietly, but deeply. She couldn't risk poisoning the child. Now what? The coffee beans? But Aaron would drink coffee too. Maybe another kind of toxin. Something that looked like salmonella. She couldn't wait until the family went back where they belonged. Devers and Pace would be dead by then, if they weren't already, and Karsten would be on high alert. This was her one chance to stay ahead of the panicked reaction. There would be 6 bottles of juice. Only one poisoned. Odds were Karsten would drink it. It was unlikely the child would be hurt. Ugh, she groaned mentally and slowed her pace. She knew she wasn't going to do it. And she couldn't go back to his favorite sidewalk cafe and add an extra ingredient to his chicken parm. He'd surely given up that habit once she'd contacted him there. She'd be stuck with something really obvious and dangerous now, like borrowing Daniel's rifle and shooting Karsten through his kitchen window. Her chances of getting caught and killed would be much, much higher than she'd planned. Kevin was going to be disgusted with her. Only one person on her list, and she'd already blown it. She couldn't resent that reaction. She was disgusted with herself, too. As though he could read her mind, just then, Kevin called. She felt the vibration in her pocket, then pulled the phone out and read the number. She hit answer and put it to her ear, but didn't say anything. She was still too close to the housekeeper, and she didn't want the woman to hear her voice and turn, getting another closer look at the blonde woman shadowing her. Perhaps the housekeeper was still the way in. Alex couldn't afford to be noticed. Alex waited for Kevin to start in on her. Irrationally sure, he had somehow sensed that she was failing.
Way to drop the ball, Oleander, in the half-shout that was his normal volume.
Kevin said nothing. She pulled the phone back to look at the screen. Had they been disconnected? Had he dialed her by accident? The call was live. The seconds counted upward in the bottom corner of the screen. Alex almost said, "Kevin?" 4 years of paranoia stopped her tongue. She pressed the phone to her ear and listened intently. There was no ambient sound of a car or movement, no wind, no animal sounds, no human sounds. Goosebumps erupted on the backs of her arms, raised the hair on her neck. She'd walked past her car, and now she had to keep going. Her eyes darted around while she kept her head still. She focused on a dumpster in the back corner of the lot. Her pace quickened. She was too close to the center of her enemy's power. If they were tracing this call, it would not take them long to get here. She wanted to run, wanted it badly, but she kept herself to a quick, purposeful walk. Still no sound from the other end of the line. The cold, heavy hollow in the pit of her stomach grew larger. Kevin wasn't going to suddenly start speaking to her. She knew that. Still, she hesitated for one more second. Once she did what she knew she had to do now, it was over. Her only connection to Kevin was severed. She hung up. The numbers at the bottom of the screen told her the call had lasted for only 17 seconds. It felt like much more time had passed. She walked around the side of the dumpster, where she wasn't visible from the parking lot. She couldn't see anyone, which hopefully meant no one could see her. She set the groceries on the ground. In the lining of her purse, she had a small lock-picking kit. She'd never had to use it for its real purpose, but it came in handy now and then when she worked with some of her smaller reflux rings and adapters. She pulled the thinnest probe, then used it to pop the SIM card tray out from her phone. Both card and tray went into her bag. Using the hem of her t-shirt, she carefully wiped the phone down, handling it only through the fabric. The tether of the shirt's length made it hard to get the phone through the side hatch on the dumpster. It was too high up. She had to toss the phone when she couldn't reach far enough, but she got it through in one try. Alex grabbed the paper bags, spun back around, and walked quickly to her car. The minivan was just exiting the lot. She couldn't tell if the housekeeper had noticed her side trip. She took the longest strides she was capable of as she hurried back. The phone was gone, but she could almost see the seconds still ticking away in the corner of the screen. There were two possibilities now, and one of those possibilities gave her a very tight deadline indeed. Chapter 27 "Alex, he just pocket-dialed you," Daniel argued.
"Danny's right," Val agreed. "You're overreacting. It's nothing."
Alex shook her head, feeling the pull in her jaw as her teeth clenched.
"We need to move," she said flatly. "Because the bad guys might be torturing Kevin for information as we speak," Val recapped.
She used the patient, humoring voice people used with very young children and the elderly. Alex's answer was cold and hard.
"It won't be a joke if they come for you, Val. I can promise you that." "Look, Alex, your own plan had just failed," Val reminded her. "You were already upset. Kevin called you and didn't say anything. That is all that happened. I think it's a little bit of a leap to assume it was more than an accident."
"It's what they do," Alex said in a slow, even voice. Even before Barnaby had gotten her the appropriate classified reading material, she'd seen some of this in action. "The subject has a phone with one number on it. You call that number and see what kind of information you can get from it. You track the signal you've just created. You find the person on the other end."
Well, there's nothing to find, though, right? Daniel asked encouragingly. You toss the phone. It can't lead them to anything more than a parking lot that's not connected to us.
The phone is a dead end, she agreed. But if they have Kevin... Doubt rippled across Daniel's face. Val still wore a patronizing expression.
Do you think they would have killed him?
Daniel asked in a voice that was almost a whisper.
That's the best case scenario, she said bluntly. She didn't know how to sugarcoat it or say it in a gentler way. If he's dead, they can't hurt him anymore, and we're safe. If he's alive...
She took a deep breath and refocused. Like I said, we need to move. Val was unconvinced.
You really think he'd sell Danny out?
Look, Val, I would never question your understanding on anything remotely feminine. That's your world. This is mine. I am not exaggerating when I say that everyone breaks. It doesn't matter how strong Kevin is or how much he loves his brother. It may take a while, but he will tell them where we are. And for his sake, I hope it doesn't take that long.
It would, though, and she knew it. Rocky as her relationship with Kevin had always been, she had learned to trust him, to know him. He would buy her the time she needed to get Daniel and Val somewhere safe. Partly because he did love his brother, and partly because of his pride. He'd never give Devers what he wanted easily. Kevin would make them work for every word they pried out of him. She was glad it wasn't her job to break Kevin. She was sure he would be the hardest case she'd ever faced. If anyone could do it, actually take his secrets to the grave with him, that person might be Kevin Beach. Maybe he would have broken her perfect record. For a second, she could see it vividly. Kevin restrained on the state-of-the-art table in the old lab, herself standing over him. How would she have worked the case? If things had panned out just slightly differently, if her Pakistani subject had never murmured the name Wade Pace, the scenario she pictured could have been her reality. She shook the image away and looked up at Daniel and Val. Alex could see that her tension, her intensity and dark certainty were finally getting to Daniel, at least.
If they did get Kevin, what do you think would happen to Einstein?
Val asked, still skeptical, but her lapis eyes were abnormally vulnerable. Alex winced. Why had she learned to care so much about an animal on top of everything else? What a stupid thing to do.
We don't have time to figure everything out right now, she said. Do you have a place to go, Val? A place Kevin wouldn't know about?
I've got a million places. Val's face hardened. Her perfect features suddenly looked like they belonged to a beautiful doll, cold and empty.
You?
Our options are a little more limited, but I'll figure something out. Pack up the things you want to save. It won't be safe to come back here. Can I keep the wig?
Val nodded.
Thanks. Do you have another car besides the one we've been using? Kevin had taken the McKinley's SUV when he and Einstein had set off just after midnight.
I've got a couple here. That one isn't mine. Kevin was driving it when he got here.
Val pivoted slowly, gracefully, and then sauntered to the stairs. Alex couldn't tell if she was going to pack or headed up to catch a nap. Val didn't believe her. Alex's mind was racing in 100 different directions. They'd have to get a new car quickly and dump the one Kevin knew about. There were so many details she had to think through, and she had to do it fast. Alex turned and hurried back to the guest room. She had to pack, too. And think. She hadn't planned for this. She should have. Daniel followed her down the hallway.
Tell me what I need to do, he said, as they walked through the door.
Can you get everything back into the duffel bags? I need to think for just a few minutes. We can't afford any mistakes today. Just let me concentrate, okay?
Of course.
Alex lay down on the bed, then crossed both arms over her face. Daniel worked quietly in the corner. The noise wasn't distracting. She tried to think through all the moves they had available to them, everything Kevin didn't know. There wasn't much. She couldn't even go back for Lola. Kevin had picked the boarding facility. She took another centering breath and put that thought away. There was no time for sadness now.
It would be small motels for a while, cash only. Luckily, she had plenty of Kevin's drug money. They'd be able to keep their heads down. Of course, Karsten would expect that. Her face and Daniel's would end up on a police flyer emailed to all the potential stops for 1,000 miles. Since they'd already rolled the Daniel story, maybe they'd cast her as his captive. It would be hard to sell the other version given Alex's and Daniel's relative sizes. They could camp out of whatever car they found, as they'd done before. The scrutiny would be intense. Once Karsten's people located Kevin's vehicle, they'd trace every used car sold, every want ad, every stolen car for 100 miles in any direction. Any description that fit the scenario would go onto a list, and if a cop reported that vehicle, Karsten's people wouldn't be far behind. Maybe it was time to go back to Chicago. Maybe Joey Giancardi wouldn't kill her immediately. Maybe he'd be willing to trade some kind of indentured servitude for 2 sets of facial reconstruction. Or maybe he'd get one whiff of her desperation and know there was good money to be made in selling her back to the people who wanted her. She had identities that Kevin knew nothing about, but Daniel didn't. The documents she'd grabbed from Kevin's mobile bat cave wouldn't be safe. Unless Daniel acted fast enough. She uncovered her face and sat up. "Do you think you've grasped the basic principles of hide-and-seek?" Daniel turned with 2 clear bags of ammo in his hands.
"Maybe the very most basic of the basics."
Alex nodded. "You're smart, though. You speak Spanish pretty well, right?"
"I can get by. You want to go to Mexico?"
"I wish I could. Mexico probably isn't totally safe for your face since you've been there so many times, but there are a lot of good hiding places in South America. It's cheap, too, so you won't run out of money for a while. You won't blend in, but there are lots of expats." Daniel hesitated for a second, then carefully placed the ammo in one of the duffels. He came to stand next to her.
"Alex, you're using a lot of second-person pronouns there. Are you talking about us splitting up right now?"
"You'll be safer outside the country, Daniel. If you laid low in a quiet little place somewhere in Uruguay, they might never find..."
"Then why can't we go together? Is it because they'll be looking for a couple if Kevin talks?"
She hunched her shoulders. It was half a shrug, half a defensive motion. "It's because I don't have a passport."
"You don't think they'll be waiting for Daniel Beach to try to board a plane?"
"You won't be Daniel Beach. I've got a couple of Kevin's ID sets. It will be a long while till they get around to asking him about false identities, if they ever do. You'll have plenty of time to catch a flight to Chile tonight." His expression was suddenly hard, almost angry. He looked like Kevin, and she was surprised at how sad that made her.
"So, I just save myself, then. Leave you behind?"
Another almost shrug. "Like you said, they'll be looking for a couple. I'll slip through the holes in the net."
"They'll be looking for you, Alex. I won't..."
"Okay, okay," she interrupted. "Let me think some more. I'll come up with something." Daniel locked eyes with her for a long second. Slowly, his expression softened until he looked like himself again. Finally, his shoulders slumped and his eyes closed. "I'm sorry," she whispered. "I'm sorry this didn't work. I'm sorry that Kevin..."
"I keep hoping he'll walk through the door,"
Daniel admitted, opening his eyes and staring down.
"But I can feel it in my gut. That's not going to happen."
"I know. I wish I were wrong." His eyes flashed up to hers.
"If our positions were reversed, he'd do something. He'd find a way. But there's nothing I can do. I'm not Kevin."
"Kevin would be in the same position we are. He wouldn't know where they were keeping you. If he did, he'd still be impossibly outgunned. There wouldn't be anything he could do." Daniel shook his head and sank down onto the bed.
"Somehow none of that would have stopped him."
Alex sighed. Daniel was probably right. Kevin would have some secret informant or another camera angle or a way to hack into Deaver's system. He wouldn't give up and run. But Alex wasn't Kevin either. She couldn't even poison Karsten while he was still oblivious. He wasn't anymore, she was sure of that.
Let me think, she repeated. I'll try to figure a way out. Daniel nodded.
But together, Alex. We leave together. We stay together.
Even if that puts both of us at risk.
Even then.
Alex threw herself back onto the bed, hiding her face again with her arms. If there had been some perfect escape for them, she would have tried it earlier. The whole reason she was here in the first place was that the escape option had failed. Now the attack option had failed. It didn't leave her feeling very optimistic. It was funny how you didn't realize how much you had to lose until it was gone. Yes, she knew she was in deep with Daniel. She'd embraced that disadvantage. But who would have thought she would miss Kevin? How would he become her friend? Not even a friend, because you chose your friends. More like family. The brother you tried to avoid at family gatherings. She'd never had anything like that, but this must be what it felt like. The pain of losing something you'd never wanted, but had come to count on anyway. Kevin's arrogant self-assurance had made her feel almost safe in a way she hadn't for years. His team was the winning team. His invulnerability was the safety net. Or used to be. And the dog. She couldn't even think about the dog, or she'd be incapacitated. She wouldn't be able to make her brain work toward any kind of solution. Again, the image of Kevin on her table flashed across the black insides of her eyelids. If only she could know that he was already dead. That would be something. If she could believe he wasn't in agony right now. Surely he was smart enough to have had a way out. Or was he so certain of himself that failure was never part of the plan? She thought she knew enough about Devers from his moves up to this point to be sure he wouldn't waste an opportunity if there were any way to find an edge in it. She honestly wished the situation were reversed. If she'd been the one caught, she would have been able to take a quick, painless exit, leaving Devers and Karsten no information about the others. Whatever Kevin had done wrong, however he had failed, he was still the one best qualified to keep Daniel alive, and Val too, for that matter. Val would have the easiest escape in the short term, but neither Karsten nor Devers seemed like the type to give up on a witness. If Kevin were the one in Alex's place, trying to come up with a plan, what would he do? Alex didn't know. He had resources she knew nothing about, resources she couldn't duplicate. But even then, running would have to be his only option. He might come back to try again later, but it wasn't like he could keep going after the potential vice president's kill team today. Now was the time to disappear and to regroup. Or, in her case, disappear and try to stay gone. That obnoxious image of Kevin on the table wouldn't leave her head. The problem with being a professional interrogator was that she knew, in intimate detail, all the options for what they could be doing to him now. It was impossible not to mark the passing minutes. Imagine how the questioning was progressing. Daniel was quiet. The packing hadn't taken him long. They hadn't spread out here, gotten comfortable. They'd known from the beginning that they might have to leave at any moment, whether because of another disaster or simply wearing out their welcome with Val. She could guess what he was feeling. He wouldn't want to believe things had gone so wrong. He wouldn't want to believe Kevin could be dead or that death was the best outcome for Kevin now. He would remember how Kevin had come through the roof in the middle of the night to save him and feel guilty that he couldn't do the same. More than guilty. Helpless, weak, furious, culpable, cowardly. All the things she was already starting to feel. But there was nothing she could do about Kevin. If she and Kevin switched places, there would be nothing Kevin could do either. He wouldn't know where they were keeping her. The bad guys wouldn't choose a location that either Alex or Kevin would know about. They had thousands of options open to them. And if there were some way to know where their hideout was, they certainly wouldn't be careless about the security there. Kevin would be just as helpless as she was. She shouldn't waste time thinking about the impossible. She needed to focus. She had to operate under the assumption that Kevin was still alive
and the bad guys would soon know both she and Daniel were also alive and nearby. They would know Val's name and address. They would know the make, model, color, and probably plate number of the only two cars they currently had access to. It was time to distance themselves from as many of those facts as possible. Alex sat up slowly. We'd better load the car and get moving. Daniel was leaning against the wall beside the stack of bags, with his arms crossed over his chest. Red rimmed his eyes. He nodded. Val was nowhere to be seen as they ventured out into the great room, both weighed down with bags. The space seemed colder, bigger, without the dog in it. Alex walked quickly to the front door. They didn't speak in the elevator or as they walked to the car. Alex dropped her bags by the trunk and fished the keys out of her pocket. A hushed scraping sound broke the short silence. It sounded like it was coming from close beside or maybe from underneath the car. I'm an idiot, Alex thought to herself as she dropped into a crouch next to the bag that she desperately hoped contained the guns, but most likely held medical supplies. She knew how precarious their situation was, yet she'd walked into the parking garage unarmed. She'd relied on Kevin to hold out longer. Stupid. Daniel had the heavier bags. She could tell as soon as her hand rested on the bag in front of her that it contained first aid gear. First aid she wouldn't have a use for now. At least, she had her rings and belt, so she'd have to be close. No resisting at first. That was, if they didn't just shoot her immediately. Not even a full second passed as she made these calculations. The first noise was quickly followed by another, a low whine that definitely came from under the car. The sound took her back to a different panicked moment, by a dark porch in Texas. It wasn't a human sound. Alex crouched lower, leaned her head down so it was almost touching the asphalt floor of the garage. The dark shadow beneath the sedan pulled itself closer. Einstein? She gasped. Einstein? Daniel echoed behind her. Alex crawled around to the side of the car to where Einstein was closest. Einstein, are you okay? Come here, boy. The dog crept toward her until he was free of the car. She ran her hands along his back and legs. Are you hurt? She crooned. It's okay. I'll take care of it. His fur was matted and wet in a few places, but when she pulled her hands away to check, they weren't red, just dirty. His paws were cut up a bit, and he panted like he was dehydrated or exhausted or both. Is he all right? Daniel asked, close beside her. I think so. It looks like he's had a rough night, though. Come here, boy, Daniel said, reaching for him. Einstein got to his feet, and then Daniel scooped him up. Einstein licked his face over and over again. Get him upstairs. I'll load the stuff in the car and follow.
Okay.
Daniel hesitated, then gulped a ragged breath.
It's all true.
Yes. She popped the trunk without looking up. She heard him turn and walk away. The sound of Einstein's panting faded. It didn't take her long to get things squared for their departure. The garage stayed quiet and empty of people as usual. Maybe this was Val's private floor of the parking garage. Maybe all these cars belonged to her. Alex wouldn't be completely shocked if that was the case. Shouldn't Alex feel better that the dog was okay? Part of her must have been hoping that she was wrong, that she'd overreacted, that it was just a mistake. When she walked back into the living room, Val was on the floor with the dog. Einstein was curled in her lap, with his head on her shoulder, and Daniel knelt beside them. Val looked up at her, still wearing the hard doll face.
Now is when you get to say, I told you so.
Do you need help getting out of here? Alex asked.
I've had to disappear before. It's been a while, but that's not something you forget.
Alex nodded. I'm sorry, Val.
Me too,
Val responded.
Do you think... Are you going to take the dog?
Alex blinked in surprise.
Yes.
Oh. Val pressed her face into Einstein's fur.
Give me a minute.
Her voice came out muffled.
Sure, Alex said.
They had a few hours. This location was the last thing Kevin would give up. He'd sent the dog back to warn them. He was fighting for them. Besides, she still had one unlikely avenue of information, and she should probably check that out while she had access to a high-speed internet connection. She went to the computer on the island. Karsten had been pretty tight-lipped up till now, but maybe he'd finally give something away. At the least, she should be able to construe the approximate time Kevin had been taken. Surely there would be a call to mark that. Maybe some travel. Karsten was the expert on this front, not Devers. The tracker was an easy check. Karsten's vehicle was at his office, as usual for a workday. He might have taken another car, though. She checked the sound feed. Karsten was in the office. She scrolled back to listen to his conversations. Here was something telling. Karsten had been in the office for a while. Usually he got in at 6, but there was activity beginning around 3:30 a.m. She wanted to kick herself for not checking backward on the recording before heading out this morning. His first call was short, just, "I'm here," and "What's the status?" It wasn't hard to draw conclusions from that. Someone had woken Karsten up with the news, and he'd headed to the office. With zero traffic, it would only have taken him 10 minutes to make the drive. Factor in throwing some clothes on, brushing teeth, etc., and the call could have come in anywhere from 2:30 to 3:15. She looked at the clock on her computer, calculating how long they'd had Kevin. They would have had to subdue him in the beginning, then wait for him to be fully cognizant if they'd knocked him out. Then, they'd have to decide on a course of action and bring in a specialist. Was that Karsten's second call? At 3:45, Karsten had dialed out.
"What's the play?"
"I don't like it."
"Fine, fine, if that's the best option."
"What?"
"You know how I feel about it."
"Like you say, it's your problem. I want updates."
He never said much, and the words had probably 1,000 possible interpretations, but she couldn't help applying her own. No, Kevin wasn't dead. There was a long stretch of silence. Typing, pacing, breathing, that was all. No calls. It didn't sound like he left the room once. She could almost hear Karsten's anxiety, and it made her more anxious than she already was. Where were his updates? Was he getting them in emails? Maybe they were lucky. Maybe the specialist had to be brought in from a distance. Maybe Kevin was just being held, anticipating. That was one face of the game, and she'd played the card before. Let the subject wait, visualize, panic, let him lose the fight in his own head before it began. Not likely in this case. They knew Daniel was alive. They'd suspect he had other help here in the city. They would not want to give Kevin's confederates time to escape. The clock was ticking for Karsten and Devers, too. They'd made the call. They'd heard her pick up, then disconnect. She hadn't called back to see if it was an accidental dial. The phone was ditched. They would guess the partner was already running. Like she should be. Alex came out of her intense reverie, realizing for the first time that Daniel was perched on the stool beside her, watching the reactions play across her face. Val was leaning against the counter by the sink, Einstein at her feet, also watching. "Just a little longer," she told them, scrubbing through the long silence in Karsten's office. She didn't want to miss anything, but she couldn't afford to listen through the empty spaces in real time. She paused when his voice began, and then carefully backed up. He dialed out again. The tone of his voice was 180 degrees from what it had been. It was such a shift, it jarred her. She wondered if she'd somehow messed up the program and pulled up an earlier recording. It was his kindly grandpa voice.
"I didn't wake you, did I? How'd you sleep?"
"Yes, sorry, I have a small emergency on my plate. I had to come into the office. No, don't cancel the plans. Take Livy to the zoo. It's going to get hotter tomorrow."
"You know I don't have a choice in these things, Aaron. I'm sorry I can't be there today, but there's nothing I can do about it. Livy will have a great time without me. She can tell me all about it tonight at dinner. Take lots of pictures.
I can't make any promises, but I hope to be free by dinner time.
That's not fair.
Yes, I remember that I told you this would be a light week, but you know how the job works, honey. No guarantees.
A big sigh.
I love you. Give Livy a kiss for me. I'll let you know when I'm free.
She had chills when he hung up. Karsten thought it would be over by dinner time? Or was he just placating his daughter? More silence. More typing. He must be getting the updates electronically. Kevin was in the thick of it. Alex was sure. Was he talking yet? She didn't have a clue. There was nothing more until she caught up to the present time. She checked the tracker. Karsten wasn't going anywhere. Devers must be handling his problem. Still, listening through her earbuds, Alex leaned her forehead against her arms. Karsten was typing again. She pictured him at his desk, poker face in place as he sent out directions or questions. Would he be flushed with anxiety? Would tension sweat drip off his pale, bald head? No. She was sure he would be cool and precise, no more worked up than if he were typing out a request for paper supplies. He'd know the right things to ask, even if Devers didn't. He could manage the whole operation from his ergonomically correct desk chair. He'd see Kevin tortured to death, then run out for his dinner reservations without a second thought. The sudden anger that flared up almost choked her. What was happening now had nothing to do with national security or saving lives. Karsten was running a private vendetta for a man who was quite possibly the kind of person who actually belonged on an interrogation table. Karsten had crossed the line from arguably necessary black ops to purely criminal acts a long time ago, and it didn't seem to have affected him at all. Maybe it had always been this way. Maybe everything she'd done for him, every inhuman action she'd performed in the name of public safety, had been a scam. Did he think he was so untouchable that these hidden choices would never touch his public life? Did he think he was exempt? Did he not realize that he had liabilities too? There were worse things than being poisoned. Alex's breath caught. Unexpectedly, a new avenue, something she'd never considered before, opened up inside her mind. It was a reach, and she knew it. There were 1,000 things that would probably go wrong, 1,000,000 ways to screw it up. It would be almost impossible, even with a year, to plan every detail. She felt Daniel's hand on her back. Through her earbuds, she heard him ask, "Alex?" in a worried tone. She looked up slowly. She stared at Daniel, assessing. She examined Val the same way. "Give me 10 more minutes," she said. Then she put her head down on her arms and concentrated once more. Chapter 28. Alex spoke quickly as she laid out her plan, emphasizing the details she was sure of a little more than necessary. She tried to make it sound well thought out, like she was confident about it. Daniel seemed to be buying her version, listening intently, nodding at certain intervals, but Alex couldn't read Val at all. Her eyes were focused toward Alex, but almost like she was looking through Alex's face to the back of her head. Her expression was politely distant. Alex talked through the conclusion, which wasn't nearly as fail-safe as she would have liked it to be, and she could tell she wasn't selling the outcome as well as she had the preliminaries. She looked down at Einstein's face on her leg instead of at the human faces, petting him more frequently as her discomfort grew. Trying to wrap it up on a positive note, she went on a little longer than she should have. She was still mid-sentence when Val interrupted.
"No," Val said.
"No?" Alex repeated. She said the word like a question, but she was already resigned.
"No, I won't do that. You're going to get killed. It's nice that you want to go back for Kevin, but be realistic, Alex. This isn't going to work."
"It might. They won't be expecting this. They won't be ready."
"It doesn't matter if they're ready or not. There will be more than enough of them to make up for it. So you get off a lucky shot and take one down. The guy next to him will get you."
"We don't even know how many people will be there."
"Exactly," Val said in a flat voice.
"Val, they won't pay attention to you. You'd just be an anonymous aide,
These people see hundreds of assistants every day. You'll be invisible to them.
I have never been invisible in my life. You know what I mean.
Val looked at her with a perfectly smooth face.
No.
Alex took a deep breath. She knew it wasn't fair to involve Val. She would have to make do.
Okay, she said, wishing her voice sounded stronger. I'll do it by myself then.
Alex, you can't,
Daniel insisted. She smiled weakly at him. I can. I don't know how well I'll do, but I have to try, right? Daniel looked at her, torn. She could see that he wanted to argue. He wanted to say no, she didn't have to try. But that would mean walking away, leaving Kevin to die in agony. His was an untenable position. Now that there was any hope at all, how could he turn his back on it?
Together, we'll be able to get the first part done, she told him. It won't take more than the two of us.
But the second you're separated from Karsten, he'll double-cross you.
Alex shrugged. I'll just have to sell my threat. If he thinks betraying me means the hostage dies, maybe he'll play it clean.
You won't know how he's playing it. You won't be prepared.
Val doesn't want to risk her life. Can you argue with her?
Val watched Daniel with half-lidded eyes as he hesitated.
No, he said, but I can do her part. We'll trade. Val, you could do mine, right?
Alex squeezed her eyes shut and then slowly opened them again. Daniel, you know that won't work. Even if you weren't Kevin's twin brother, these are the people who put your face on the news.
Val can fix me up. Can't you, Val? Make me look different enough?
Val's expression shifted abruptly, became more engaged. She examined his face closely.
Actually, I think I could. She turned to Alex. It's not like anyone is going to be looking for him there. Trust me, a lot more people would look at me, even as a nameless assistant. I think I can make him different enough for them not to give him a second glance.
I'm not doubting your abilities, Val, but they're twins.
Let me try? She asked, an unfamiliar pleading tone coming into her voice.
I do want to help Kevin. When she said his name, Einstein looked up. I just won't die to do it. Let me do something.
Einstein put his head on Alex's leg again.
I guess I could let you try. But it's a waste of time, and we don't have enough of that as is.
It won't take me that long.
And you'd be willing to do Daniel's part of the plan?
Sure, that's easy. No one will be shooting at me.
Alex winced.
What was she contemplating here?
People would be shooting at Alex, for certain. She'd already come to terms with that, but if Val could disguise Daniel enough, which Alex couldn't even imagine, then they might be shooting at Daniel, too. She reminded herself of all the reasons they had to go after Kevin. He had too much vital information. If he told the bad guys everything he knew about Alex and Daniel, the cars they were in, the places they had to go to ground, the way Alex operated, it wouldn't be that hard for the agency to track them down. Val, too.
Most likely, they'd all die anyway.
Die like cowards, running. But the reasons were moot. If there was a way to save Kevin from what was happening to him, she had to do it. There was a bond there now that she hadn't even realized was forming. He was her friend. Her second liability. They were hurting him, even as she sat here considering. She had to stop it.
Get to work, Val. This first part will take me 2 hours, if I'm lucky. When I get done, we'll reevaluate.
Though she'd lived in D.C. for almost a decade, Alex had never visited the National Zoo. She'd always thought of it as something for children, but there seemed to be plenty of adults attending today unencumbered by offspring. There were still many, many children. It seemed like thousands of them yapping in high-pitched voices and flailing around their parents' feet. All appeared to be under the age of 5, so she guessed school wasn't done for the year yet, though it must be close. She tried to think how long it had been since she'd first met with Karsten, but she couldn't tally up the days in a way that made sense. Daniel had had around 3 weeks left of school then. More time had passed than that, hadn't it? Maybe Daniel's school finished earlier than average. Alex's first stop was the rental line at Guest Services. It wasn't long.
Most of the visitors would have arrived earlier, in the cool of the morning. Lunchtime was approaching, with the sun beating down almost directly overhead. Some people would leave then, avoid the high prices of the food inside the park, head home for nap time. She had quite a bit of information about Aaron and Olivia, all gleaned from Aaron's Facebook page. It was the same place that, months ago, she'd found the picture of Olivia that hung around her neck now. Alex knew Olivia was 3 and a half, still small enough that she would fit in a stroller. Alex knew what Aaron looked like from nearly every angle and had a good idea of the kinds of clothes she wore. She knew Aaron was a late riser and probably wouldn't have gotten to the zoo right as it opened. She knew Olivia was most excited about seeing the pandas. Alex paid $9 cash for a single stroller, then put her backpack in it and headed into the park. She craned her neck around, searching. It made sense that she would be looking for someone, maybe her sister and nephews or her husband and their child. There were lots of other patrons looking for their parties. She didn't stand out. Aaron and Livy would be past the pandas by now, probably thinking about lunch. She analyzed the map she'd gotten with the stroller. She'd try across from the apes first, then near the reptiles. She walked fast, ignoring the turnoffs and viewing areas. Aaron had the fair skin of a redhead, like her father. She'd posted pictures of herself sunburned and moaned about freckles. Aaron would be in a hat and probably light long sleeves. Her hair was bright and hung halfway down her back. It would catch the eye. Alex scanned the crowds as she moved quickly through them, looking for a woman with a child, ruling out those with friends and spouses and multiple children. For a while, she followed a woman with her hair rolled up under a wide-brimmed straw hat, pushing a single stroller, but then the child climbed out to walk with her. It was a boy. A quick loop around the big cats, and then down toward the petting zoo. All the while, she was conscious of how she looked, map in hand, vigilantly searching for her companions. She wore a straw hat of her own over the dark blonde wig, and wide-frame sunglasses. She had on a plain t-shirt, boyfriend jeans, and the sport shoe ballet flat hybrids that would let her run if she had to. Nothing about her would be particularly memorable. Several shades of red hair had grabbed her attention throughout the course of her search, but many of them had been clearly unnatural. Others had been on women too old to be Aaron, or too young, or holding extra children. Now she spotted one headed along the trail toward the Amazon exhibit, a long braid of golden red hair swinging from beneath a white bucket hat. The woman was pushing a single stroller. It looked exactly like Alex's, tan molded plastic with a dark green shade. She wore a sleeveless tank, and her arms were thick with freckles. Alex walked quickly after her. The woman wasn't moving fast. It didn't take long for Alex to pass her. Alex kept her head down and glanced into